ZW. And they're OTR Mobile. Go ahead.
Hey, is my signal coming through okay? Do you detect any problems or a 60 megahertz power hum?
Yes, I do, sir. It's, like I said, it's not overwhelming, but it's riding right along with you, kind of like a light DTMF tone, shall we say. That's the only way I know how to describe it.
I did find a problem with my computer monitor. The HDMI cable was giving up RF, so I swapped the HDMI cable out and on that particular monitor, and I'm not having any problems with that anymore.
Great. You're on the road to success. You'd have to get a second opinion here from a knowledgeable person, but I kind of think it's your power supply. I don't know if anybody else is on there, but that's what I'm hearing.
Strongly suspect that as well. I'm going to have to bump it up. I'm going to check into those Astrons. But I think this radio at peak is a little more than 12 amps.
It's nominal to me. That's why you don't want to run one on a cigarette lighter plug in a car, because they just that socket gets really hot and it'll usually blow a fuse if you're running it at high power. You can get by with it if you're running 5 watts or 10 watts or even 15, but that's about it. But we all find these things out the hard way, of course, from the school of hard knocks.
Experimentation. By the way, I bumped my radio down to 10 watts, and is there any difference with this?
There is some. It's attenuated a little bit, but it's still riding right there with you like your veritable companion.
I'll figure it out eventually. I think you're done with the lows since you said you were mobile.
Yes, sir. I didn't catch your name. Mine's Tom, but we needed some grout. We put down some pavers yesterday for our glider out on the out in the backyard. I'm going to put grout between them, and it seems to be a good thing to keep them in place. Both of us are tired from yesterday trying to level those things. And I got to admit, my wife did the most because I'm a little bit on the handicap side, and I can't lift a whole lot. But we got her done anyways, and they're about 12 inches square and an inch thick, but they're pretty darn heavy.
Like it if you're talking, a square foot. And then an inch thick, yeah, they can be deceptively heavy. What do you have as a base under them when you leveled them? Were you using sand or clay or footings or anything?
Bernice said just sand. We had some of that kids' play sand, in the bags, and that's what we leveled it up with. I'm sure the ground is pretty much clay up here, and hopefully it'll stay in place. We did that under the awning on the back door, and it's been there for years now, and it works real good with that grout. It's a little finer than if you get the sackcrete in that. What was your name, sir?
Apologize. This is Ben, as in Benjamin. I'm down here in Simpsonville, kind of between Simpsonville and Malden.
Another great source down there, if you hear him, would be N4IQ. That would be Bill, and he's an engineer and exceptionally well-versed, shall we say, in electronics. I was an electronic technician and industrial electrician for 50 years, and you'll probably find me a little more particular than some people, but I think everybody will hear that. I'm 47 years old and dyslexic, Ben. I get them numbers reversed.
Gotcha. Gotcha. That would put me at a comfortable 84 until next week.
That's what they used to tell me. The good old days. They go by fast, so I always tell the younger ones, race game while you're young, because you won't be able to when you get my age.
That's one thing I'm doing with the kids, is we focus more on experiences than things, so that they have memories that'll last a lifetime instead of a thing that's invariably going to disappear.
This is OTR Mobile. Yeah, Ben, you're absolutely right. That's a good way. Oh, I hope I taught my kids well, and Bernice too. Bernice and I have been married 54 years, and I took her off the farm when she was 18, and I was 19, and I was in the service, and headed with my brother to Southeast Asia, unfortunately. But it's good. They learned me a trade, and I'll tell you that for sure, so I owe them a lot for that. But I love electricity and electronics. It's something I worked with 480 volt three phase all my life, and everything below and some of it above. 13,800 is the most I ever fiddled with, but thankfully that wasn't for long. But all enough, it's a different world, and it's still magic. Have you got a HF rig there, Ben?
Yeah, I have one on my Christmas list. I just got my General this past July, and I'm still kind of trying to work out, when I go HF, what I want out of it, what I want to do before I just start throwing money at stuff. So, you know, I'm looking at maybe getting into SP8, you know, just doing a lot of scanning and listening. You know, something like a spectrum display is really helpful that I found on, like, the web SDR stuff. So you're not just blindly, you know, twirling and you know, searching for frequencies. I mean, there's kind of some fun in that. It's certainly on the near list for sure.
Suggest yes, and I found this out the hard way many years ago. I've been an amateur radio operator for, oh, I don't know, right at 30 years. And when you invest in a power supply, get you a 30 or 35 amp Astron, then you'll have enough to run your 2-meter radio and also your HF rig. Your HF rig, and you'll hear the chickens out here by my side now. I'm stopped. They'll be squawking in the background. I found out that I had a 20-amp supply on my very first HF rig, and the engineer back in Kansas that I knew said, "Tom, you're flat-topping on the audio." And he says, "You'd never notice it, but you need at least 25-amp supply to run a 100-watt radio, and that's what most of them are." I've heard a lot of good reports on the ASU 991, and I wouldn't be the one to choose. I like Kenwood's. I'd love to have that 890S, but then you're talking $4,000. I run the 590SG, but I do have a band scope that is hooked to it. You want to make sure they have an IF output if you want to be able to hook over to a bigger screen, like one of your 27-inch monitors or something. But when you do buy a power supply, think about that ahead of time, and then you'll have all kinds of options when you go to get your HF rig. The ASUS, they make a very good radio. I'm talking to you on one. And the Kenwoods, I've always had wonderful reports on my audio. I don't do FT8 because it's not personable enough to me. I love people. I love to talk to them. So I run CW, and you could call that a digital mode of sorts, but it's not. But I've done that ever since I got my extra class license back in 93, I think it was. But I said I'd never use it again because I hated learning it. But it's a wonderful mode, and it's more personable, shall we say. And then you also have single sideband, which is very nice. But that's just my recommendation. FT8, really the computer is making the contact. CW, you're talking with your fingers, just like Maul Bell. yeah, the chickens are raising cane over here. Man, go ahead, and I won't hold you up much longer. I'm just sitting here with the wife by the garden and the chickens.
For the EW, I have an old Yaesu 7100M in the car, and then I've got a Yaesu 8T. And the 991 made my short list for HF, as well as the ICOM 7300. Now, I know that there's some dream machines in the Flex radios and the Elatron K4, and that's up in the $5,000 and $10,000 range. I think the deciding factor, I'm going to probably go with the 7300 for the ease of use factor, because I've always found Yaesu's menuing system to be difficult. Deep learning curve, but then even when you learn it, it's difficult and unwieldy when you're really trying to get some changes made on the fly. So that was preset on the 991A. But I think that's what tipped the scales. Now, ICOM's coming out with a 905 where your feed line is power over Ethernet. It's basically a proprietary unit right there at the tower. So you get to eliminate that feed line loss, which I find completely brilliant. And then with the power over Ethernet, it's able to power that device. And then you've got maybe a couple of centimeters of feed line between the device and your antenna. But that was, I don't think it's out yet. I think they just introduced it as the Tokyo radio show like last month or something. So those are my thoughts so far.
And for DJC.
Hi, Jerry. Sitting here in the truck talking to Ben down at Simpsonville, and you can put your input there. I need to get out because the chickens are raising holy high cane over here beside of me. She's even standing up on the water bucket, which I thought was impossible because I got a funnel on top of. When they see you come near the pen, they think, uh-oh, it's feed time. Good morning, Jerry. Go ahead.
Good morning, Ben. Good morning, Tom. Hope you're doing okay. I survived yesterday, man. I got really ill yesterday afternoon. I ran a temperature about 101.9 or something like that last night. Finally got a damn, I don't know what, whether it was something I ate or what, but didn't have any other symptoms other than being, something didn't exactly feel right, but I didn't have any other kind of disorder or something. I'm not sure what it was, just glad to be rid of it. And, Ben, that 905 is an interesting thing. I've got the 705 ICOM, which is a 10-watt version. You know, it's all band, all mode, D-Star. And the 905 is an interesting thing. I watched that thing from Japan where they introduced it and found out a little more about it. And it uses an RF module. I think the LAN cable that comes with it is about, whatever cable they use for power over Ethernet, about 60 feet long, but the RF module is only 10 watts, and it's 144, 440, 1296, 2.45, and the 10 gigahertz module is an option, but it's a nice concept, but the power, I'm not sure how they're going to handle any higher power than that for maybe If it crosses over into the other radios, M4DJC.
Agree. Being pretty new, I'm not really into QRP, so I do look for a little power on the line until I get better at antenna tuning, building, things like that. But I thought that concept was rather brilliant, because I'm like, you know, we're people who work with wireless, so, you know, why I just find it difficult that I'm drilling these big holes and doing, you know, wire pulls through my, the walls and the windows and stuff like that, and I think that's an interesting step to just run that signal and electricity on the PoE Cat 6 line, maybe Cat 7, because I mean it's a lot. Feed line's expensive, good stuff's bulky, and getting to where you need it to go. If you don't have a dedicated shack and then you just go straight out to a tower, it's difficult to work with.
TR. Guys, I'm going to let you have it. You're talking above my pay grade anyways, Jerry. nice talking to you this morning, Ben. And you can ask Jerry. Jerry, he wanted to know if I heard a 60-cycle harmony signal, and there definitely is. It's not objectionable by any means, but it's definitely there, and he's running a little switch mode power supply. And so I told him to get him an Astron big enough that when he does buy an HF rig, it'll power both of them. So I'll say 73's Ben and Jerry, and send it to you, N4DJC and 0GR. Maybe I'll talk to you later, Jerry. Good morning.
Everybody's have a good afternoon, and probably catch you a little bit later on. And Ben, yeah, the 905 concept is something that's just busy. This thing is probably going to be a lot more expensive than most people realize. I'm sure the price point is going to be probably $2,500. And, you know, 10 watts makes sense on, you know, if you're working with 2.4. I don't know how much wattage you put that on 2.4, 5, or 10, but those guys issued a line of sight with that. Or, you know, you can do range scatter on 10 gigahertz, but that's really a point-to-point type of communication portal work. And, you know, I like the idea of having an RF module, you know, out there on its own. And it's just going to be real interesting. I think it's about a year out. They're already taking deposits on it now. I think it's a year out. And I think you'd be better served, of course, if you're starting out in with something like a 7300. I find the Yaesu menus a little difficult. The icon menus are pretty consistent throughout the line. And if you got one, you know, it works on the other one. You don't have to get through a whole bunch of sub-menus to do a few minor things.
That was my conclusion. I really like the feature set of the 991, especially being the shack in the box. But I figure I'll split them up and have the VHF, UHF on one unit, which is the one I have. And then the HF unit to be its own thing. I'm pretty sure, as you said about the power supply, I've got a 12-amp switching power supply. And it's giving me some problems on transmit. So I will probably upgrade one of those Astron, probably go 35, 45 watt, and it be my shack radio. And then I can use this 12-amp, put it on the workbench, and use it for testing and, troubleshooting and experimentation purposes when I just need, I'm not putting a lot of heavy or peak load on it.
An Astron switch reminds me of 18-amp, I think, is a little slimline they use with some high-power mobile radios. I'm running off a battery now. I've got one Bioveno lithium iron-type battery. You can just give it a couple of thousand charges, and it puts out about 13.3 volts or so. Well, actually, about 14 almost. And it lasts several days, but it does have a charger for you. The charger is a small switch and supply, but the chargers are generally pretty noisy. And, you know, of course, you can see that, you just, you know, when you got a battery like this one does, of course, it has an internal battery, too, for this radio. It's a small. But you can tell when you're on, like, a HF band, you unplug that power supply, switch and supply, and if it goes down to nothing, almost, you know, that's where your RF's coming on. And this particular radio is more susceptible because it didn't have a metal case. You know, it's not really as well shielded because it's really meant for portal use and that sort of thing. But I use my beers. I use it for 2 meters. I don't get on HF, though. The D-Star on 2 meters and 440, but I think you're right. I think getting something like a Astron that maybe got a couple of good connections on the back and maybe a 30 amp or so, maybe a 35. And a lot of people like linears for HF. They're a lot more quiet, but they are a whole lot bigger and generally more expensive than the switching types are.
That all makes sense. And I do like the idea of introducing a battery in the middle of it so that you are running off the battery and then your power supply is just constantly charging the battery. I would think that would give you a more consistent source of power instead of it maybe, faltering when you peak and then dialing back at times. So, I don't know if that's how you're set up, but that sounds like it would really even out the power a lot without putting in some kind of line conditioner.
1040JC Friday will have been one of the things, the power supply, it's not coming in through the line, it's just generating whenever it's on, basically. And you could probably wrap the power in, wrap take a toroid or something, put about 10 wraps of the power in line on the toroid, it probably eliminate the RFI entirely. But this radio has an internal battery. I mean, it has an internal battery. It's like a handheld almost. It's got a battery that snaps on the back, and then I've got the bio-inno just off to the side here. It's a 4.5 amp. It weighs about a pound, but I can run the radio exclusively on that most of the time for about 9 or 10 hours. It lasts me several days, actually, because I'm only running 5 watts right now. And it'll run 10 watts on it, but, you know, it just heats the battery up a little faster. But this one doesn't drop off like the standard lithium batteries do. These batteries are pretty expensive for the capacities. But it's small. It's only maybe, I think this is probably 2x3x2 or something like that. It's not very big at all. And it just, you know, it just hooks into DC input on the radio. So it works out pretty good. I've got the power supply on right now, but I can unplug it. If I unplug the power supply, any of the other stuff on HF, it just goes away at that point. But, I know a couple of people, that's all they run. They run run battery only. Don't fill the power supply. But, you know, if you got a base station where you're going to operate a lot, that just doesn't make a... Some people it doesn't make a lot of sense, but some guys run like they have like a 20 or 25 amp version of this bio-inno, and that's all they use. They only have a regular AC power supply at all.
Well, right now, with this radio, it goes 5, 10, 25, 50 watt, and I'm running on the 10 watt right now. But when you're talking about wrapping the power cable with a toroid, are we talking about the cable from the outlet to the power supply or the cable from the power supply to the radio?
Normally from the power supply to the radio is what most people do. But, you can take like a T24 toroid, wrap about 10 wraps around it, and it'll eliminate almost all of it. But again, it's not necessary for this. And these little small, this thing, this little switch supply I've got, it's just a charger. It runs about 15 volts, I think 15.2 or something like that, into the battery. And you can charge the battery and use external battery at the same time as we discussed earlier. But it's still got, as I said, this radio is not... it's really designed more for outside use. It's nice it would be in a plastic case, not having a lot of shielding on it. It will pick up a little more RFI, but now the signals are generally pretty clean coming out of it, and the audio is good at both ends, because like the 7300, the same way, I guess I could change my tone, you know, treble and bass and that sort of thing on the transmit and receive on this radio, which makes it even just a touch screen. Really, the screens on this one are the same size as a 7300, so, you know, it'd be very similar, you know, as far as how it looks, but it's just got the, being a QRP rig, it's just smaller, the overall radio is smaller, and also has 2 meters of 440, you know, all mode on it as well.
That is one thing, this radio I'm running is pretty solid, but no, it's not an all mode, and I think that would be maybe my next step for a UHF radio to get one that is all mode. I'm really unsure about stuff like DMR, because I'm like, you know, is that really just using the internet? So, but to having the ability to do single sideband and CW, you know, the all mode would be, that sounds like, you know, maybe a next step for the upper end for me.
There's not much activity on sideband on 2 meters or on 440 in this area. I think, you know, more and more is the 991 having that capability. You'll see more and more people on it eventually. But the, you know, I was active on 2 meter single sideband back in the early 80s, and it was really popular then. And that ran over 10 watts. It still worked like 14 or 15 states, I think, you know, when the TROPO was open. It's not a real popular mode in this part. In Florida, it's real popular because they have ice, you know, ducting and that sort of thing, and they can work from one end of Florida to the other sometimes because it's so close to the ocean. And same thing if you're working from mountaintops or something like that. It's not real popular here right now. It may at some point the only other reason to get an all mode VHF UHF rig is if you have something like an ICOM 9700, which is basically a 3-band satellite radio, where, you know, because there's some satellites, of course, I work FM satellites a fair amount, but there's a lot of satellites still that are on upper and lower sideband, and they have enough bandwidth where you can actually just instead of just exchanging grid squares and hey and bye and that sort of thing, you can actually carry on a conversation. And they require, you know, having either CW or lower and upper sideband. That's where the dual band full duplex radios come into hand. But then again, you get into a whole other realm of complexity and, you know, tracking and, you know, being able to follow the Doppler shift up and down. It's just a whole, you know, that's kind of the, when you run out of other things to do sort of thing, Ben.
W. Yeah, I am kind of interested in satellite work, which I may start getting into, because I'm still, as you know, pretty new at this, and really trying to feel out where what I want to do with it. And satellite does it sounds pretty cool. I watched some videos for people that will manually track the satellite. Some people will interface the antenna with the software, which will track the satellite, as well as handle the Doppler shift for them. And then some of the SSTV images that you can pull down. It is really, it's a different world, but I may go there sometime.
It can't take much work at all. It's just... You just have you just use an app that's on the phone. It's just FM. It's just a basically analog signal, and you can use an app on your phone to receive it through the speaker, and it'll decode the slow scan TV on the space station. And then they have an APRS digipeater on board, too. It's just one frequency up and down, and you've got the crossband force repeater, which is 2 meters up, 440 down. That's the one where you really don't need to worry about the uplink. The downlink is when you need to track, because at that higher frequency, it does change some. But you just need to have a full duplex radio in order to either two radios or a full duplex radio to do that. For instance, some of the key ones do that. Most all the ICOM dual band mobiles will do that. They'll work full duplex, and a lot of people use them for satellites. The antenna situation is different. You can use a vertical antenna for the space station, especially if it's going away from you at lower angles, or a little more power maybe, or you can use a handheld antenna like I do, where you just get outside and, you know, track it with a, and just hand track it yourself. You don't have to be, you know, you don't have to be very precise on it, or you can go as far up as spending, you know, the $3,000 or so for the azimuth elevation rotors and LEO pack antennas and all that sort of thing. You can spend a ton of money, but it's not really necessary. You can do it on a lot less than, you know, like I said, if you just have a good dual band full duplex radio, FM radio, you can do a lot on that without getting into the upper and lower sideband thing. That's just, you know, that's something that requires a whole lot more. You're talking about a whole other league and operating when you do that. It's just a lot more complex.
If it is coming down FM, basically FM phone, could you run the 3.5 external speaker port into as an input on your computer, put in an SSTV decoder and just take that literal analog signal and decode it that way? Is that something, is that sort of like a just a rough way to do it, or is it even possible?
Yeah, well, all I do with mine is just whenever it's coming over, and the signals are real. I mean, all the slow scan signals are from the service module, which is the Russian side, is about 25 watts times it is a loud signal. You don't have to worry about loss of signal being weak. You don't have to have much of an amp. You can do it on rubber duck sometimes. And all I do is I just put my microphone on my phone up next to the speaker, and it decodes it immediately. Then you don't have to be, didn't have to be that complex, but you can do it through a computer as well. That's just kind of the quick, dirty way to do it, the way I do it.
W. Yeah, I've got a discone up on top of the house, runs 25 megahertz, about 1.3 gig. And I have caught a couple of passes of the ISS. As long as it's lower on the horizon, I've actually gotten a couple of minutes of people using the, at least the repeater function on it. I've never heard any astronauts. I know they jump on every now and then, but if it's making a pass and it's over a different state coming past me, I can pick it up on the disc gun and follow it for a couple of minutes.
Yeah, a little lower radiation angles. They work, most of the verticals work better at lower elevations, and the antenna is at the back of the craft, on the left-hand side of the craft. So if it's going away from you, you know, when you get down to maybe 30 degrees, you'll have a better chance of hearing it and getting into it if it's going away from you. If it's, you know, when you're getting like the acquisitional signal, when it's coming over initially, it's a little harder to work that. And like I said, there's no, most people use an FM radio, I think it's 436-800. I'm not sure. I don't even remember. I just had a program number. If it's like 436-800, they'll start out at 810 and just go down 5 at a time, 805, 800. It passes over. And it doesn't, like I said, it just doesn't take much in the way of equipment. It's just the only problem with it is it's just really busy. It's like, you know, people talking on top of each other. And a lot of that is due to people that are using, you know, have a duplex where they can't hear their own downlink. You really need a full duplex radio or two radios to work it properly, because if you can't hear your downlink, that means it's not getting through the repeater.
I have caught it. It's been slam busy. I mean, that thing is always lit up when it comes over, especially coming over the East Coast of the United States. Listen, I got to get going here. I got to catch up on a couple of emails eating lunch. So, cool talk to you. This is Ben, KO4ZEW.
Hey, Jerry. Juliet Echo, Romeo Yankee, and the call is N4DJC, November 4, Delta, Juliet Charlie. And I hope you have a good day. Enjoy talking with you. And, next time I hear you on, I'll give you a shout. 73, N4DJC, clear.
I wrote down your call sign, and I'm sure we'll be talking to you another time soon. KO4ZEW, clear.